Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Good Monday morning to you. Thank you for being with us. We always appreciate it. Text line 251-343-0106. So you get in touch with me, your show host. Coming up on the program today, we'll kick it off here with Shane Stringer. We haven't heard from him in, 2 weeks, I guess. He'll be with us. Talk about some state stuff, maybe partisan parole board. That appointment is still very interesting to me. Not a whole lot of scuttlebutt left, but I still think it's worth mentioning. Also, Del Jackson from WVNN and Yellowhammer News will make time for us. I think he is taking off of his show today and will be with us, make time for us. And then finally, my colleague at Breitbart News, Bradley J. And we're going to spend some time on this. Kind of lead off the drama of the Epstein files and Pam Bondi. I'm beginning to say I'm getting, I don't know, I find it kind of mildly irritating with the push to, we got to fire Pam Bondi. Well, number one, who are you going to replace her with? And I said this last week, everything that the Department of Justice does is, this is small. This Epstein saga is a blip, a drop in the bucket. And the one thing you need to know, and we've said this too, when has there ever been a popular attorney general, Democrat or Republican, name me one? Eric Holder probably weathered the storm the best because he was the longest serving AG in American history. But and some of you who are keeping up with this, essentially we'll do a quick reset here. The botched handling of the Epstein files and Trump sort of saying, we're still talking about that, trying to get us to drop it. It's not a big deal. Not a smart tactical play. Anyway, the sort of alt-right, and look, the left is seizing on it this morning. They're all of the CNN, MSNBC, all of the viral posts on Facebook, social media from Huffington Post. They're taking the ball and now finally running with it. And it took them a lot longer than I would have thought. So the Trump comms team wanted to do kind of a thing with the year anniversary of Butler, Pennsylvania. But the talk about the botched handling of Epstein and the dissension sort of on the right is leading the way, and we knew the left would eventually catch up on it. But there's at least talk from some quote-unquote influencers to fire the AG, get a new attorney general. This is unacceptable. This was mishandled, etc. I think you got to be careful with this stuff. This is where administrations, it really takes a hit on presidential approval ratings. It's going to take a bite out of any ability to do a second reconciliation package. I will acknowledge they mishandled it, and I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't know if there's anything there or not. there's a lot of talk, well, if there were a Trump involvement somehow on the Epstein client list, then the Democrats would have used it already, which is, I don't think, necessarily the case either. But is it a fireable offense? Everything the DOJ does, is this fireable for the Attorney General? It's not. It's not even going to happen because Trump's not going to do that. But the discussion is, and he should, because Pam Blondie has, and that, those are not, that's not the name I gave her, has has botched this, let us all down. And, you know, that's valid. But I think people kind of lose sight of just how big the DOJ is and what everything the FBI does, every investigation, all the, we don't even have U.S. attorneys confirmed yet. We don't even know who the appointees are or will be. There are still people in this state vying to be our U.S. attorney. There's a lot of rumor mill stuff out there. Who's running for what? But they still believe they're under consideration to be U.S. attorney. Like the ship hasn't really even gotten moving yet. But go back and look at our last several AGs in America. Let's start with Merrick Garland. Was not popular among Democrats because he didn't go after Trump or the January Sixers aggressively enough in the eyes of the left. And then you already have half the country, because of the association with Biden, that don't like you. And then you split that even further down the middle on with the base. I could go back before that. Was Bill Barr ever popular? Jeff Sessions, as a texter points out, for his recusal. Well, Loretta Lynch, Eric Holder with the Obama administration, who had his, I mean, Holder had his problem with Fast and Furious, but he at least kind of kept the base. There wasn't a lot of discussion about him. And they would do, what the Obama administration would do is they would pick a target on the right and they'd really hype it up and make the base think that they were doing their job. Go back to Bush, Alberto Gonzalez comes to mind. I didn't hear a lot about McCasey. Ashcroft was reviled by the left because he didn't want a statue that had exposed, I don't remember what it was. You go back to, what, Clinton, yeah, Janet Reno, and we remember Waco. You go back, and there's never been, like, a very, like, popular, favorably rated AG. Because you're always going to have the opponents of the administration just already dead set against that cabinet member. And if it's a Republican, you're going to have the media against it. But on the, when it is a Republican, there's always kind of a rumbling about, well, this Republican prosecutor's not doing enough to go after the corruption on the other side, or whatever that may be. So here we are, and it's the same thing again here. And what do you think is going to happen? Well, let's play this little fantasy out. If they fired Pam Bondi, do you think the next AG is going to be, oh, the people have spoken, we're going to release everything? Like I said, it's just not going to happen. So just, you know, I don't expect, the right that's kind of fed up with this to embrace Pam Bondi. But the next AG, assuming you have the votes to push him or her through the Senate for confirmation is not going to be liked either. You just got to ride it out. 251-343-0106. As mentioned earlier on Mobile Morning, some of Barry Moore and his, what, August 15th announcement for likely U.S. Senate seat up in Sylvania drew the ire of my radio colleague, Sean Sullivan. Yeah, Sand Mountain announcement from the Wiregrass member of Congress is interesting. I guess the play there is to spread things out geographically. But I think it's a valid point they were making this morning. You just haven't seen, and this is, I don't necessarily blame the member. I blame the way the lines are drawn. You don't have a member of Congress who's as laser focused on this part of the state anymore. This is what happens. When people would talk about it like this, well, we're going to have two members of Congress and two is better than one in Mobile. That this is what always happens. This is what in the last time this happened in Alabama to this extent. Now Birmingham's always kind of been divided between 7 and 6, and even 3 a little. Montgomery was divided between 2, 3, and 7 congressional districts. But Decatur in, I'd say about 10 years ago, the city of Decatur was in both the 5th Congressional District, which was Mo Brooks, and the 4th, which was Robert Adderhold. And they hated it. They thought 2 would be better than 1. And they did not, they absolutely hated it. And it sounds like the same thing's happening here. With Barry Moore and Shamari Figures. This is a product of the federal courts. This is a product. I'm going to tell you, you want somebody to blame. And I mean, Barry Moore probably could do better, and so could Congressman Figures. Blame Richard Shelby. Anna Manasco. The judge who kind of led the charge for this redistricting was Shelby's pick. Shelby was a senior senator when they were filling these judicial vacancies and put her name in there. She came from the right law firm, went to the right law school, went to the right cocktail parties, the right church, everything that lined up with what they wanted. And she got the appointment with Trump. Because like I said, the way it works is the senior senator, the administration is very deferential to the senior senator. And they come up with a list of names for U.S. attorney and for these judicial vacancies. And that's what we got. Which I think is a total letdown. Because she's more of a judicial activist, being so aggressive with the Alabama legislature. 251-343-0106. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Take this. Yes, cowboys have.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Your leather jacket means to you.
Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106 is the text line. If you want to be in touch with the program, hit us up on the text line. We got a bunch of texts to get to here. We'll kick it off. Unnamed texter, Jeff Sessions did all right, LOL. Being facetious there, I assume. Unnamed texter, when has there been justice for anyone in the ruling class? I mean, they will pick targets because they are like high profile for sure and go after them more aggressively. Absolutely will. They went after Donald Trump for, you know, way harder than they did for Biden on the classified documents. And so I think there is, when they choose to do so. Now, it's like this. If they go in, they go all in. They don't just kind of, hey, you need to knock this off a lot of times with these big fish. Tim, Jeff, my thoughts on the Epstein file is they're probably going to get more leverage with not putting it out so far as negotiating deals. Then if they post it and that's all Dems got, this little stuff like the Epstein file, I don't think they're using it in that way, Tim. On a texter, it was Bill Barr who should have been fired in Trump 1.0. Bondi is doing what Trump has told her, and Trump has some leverage over by not disclosing this list. I really am starting to believe that they oversold it. Way oversold it. And Trump kind of let it go. Now, if you look back and try to find what Trump himself was talking about, Epstein. And you have to go back and you can't find much. But a lot of his surrogates were. So is he held accountable for what people working on his behalf were saying? I mean, maybe some degree. Depends on how closely affiliated they were with the campaign. But it turned a corner for me when Bongino was on, and this was long before this episode really blew up, was on with Cash Patel, said there's nothing there. I looked at the file, he committed suicide. I was like, well, they're not gonna do anything with this. But here's the problem. They got to do something now because they're weaponizing it on the left. And so you hear this. Well, Biden didn't use it against Trump because he's probably implicated or somebody on, you know, in his orbit is, or the Clintons or something like that. When has the left ever, like, cherry-picked? Not cherry-picked. Out of where there's, like, a hypocrisy angle. When have you ever seen the left go after Trump, but Biden does the same thing and they stay silent? Like, all the time, right? Ricky, the reset is real. Globalists are taking over with CBDC digital prison system if we don't wake up. Ricky, your prognostications have not come true for the most part. And I've been on this station for coming up here at the end of this month for 5 years. And I don't think a single one of your doom and gloom predictions has come to fruition. And I've been coming on this station since like 2009. And I'm not even sure that any of your prognostications have come true since you made your debut as a lunatic on FM Talk 106.5. 251-343-0106. Still got a ton of your text we'll get to later in the program. Stay tuned. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Son, you don't have to fight to be a man. There's someone for everyone.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Monday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with the program, text us. That's the way to go about it. Going up in about an hour, Dale Jackson from WVNN and Yellowhammer News. And then in the 11 o'clock, my colleague at Breitbart News, Bradley and Jay, will join us. So stay tuned for that. Joining us now on the line from Citronelle, he represents you in North Mobile County. State Representative Shane Stringer is with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, Jeff.
Thanks for making time for us. Do appreciate it. Whenever I have these lawmakers on, first question is how's the off time going?
Yeah, everything's going good. Can't complain. Just gives us a chance to kind of catch up with our normal life and spend a little time with our family and, just kind of regroup. But, throughout the off time, we're still meeting with constituents and different groups and trying to discuss, different issues in our communities to prepare for how we're going to deal with those.
Yeah, and, it seems... to me, relatively slow compared to past years, but this time, there was always some discussion about something the legislature was looking at in the next session, or, last year seemed to be crying. We didn't really have those concerns this year like we did last year. Maybe the year before it was gambling or whatever, but it's starting to feel, and this could totally prove out to not be the case, but it does feel like looking at January, which is not that far away, will be a relatively, comparatively tame legislative session for 2026.
Yeah, I agree. I've not really heard a lot of hot topic issues or whatever outside of my district. So it'll be interesting to see what comes up. Anytime we're going into an election year, it's not as, or don't seem to be as controversial, but you never know. It could get kicked off and go the other way with us if we, those saying if you least expect it is when it will happen.
Yeah, I've been around the state a little this year and talking to other lawmakers, and a lot of guys just kind of unplugged completely. Like it was, maybe it didn't seem like it at face value, but maybe behind the scenes a little bit bumpy. Particularly upstairs in the Senate, and there were some little bit of drama downstairs in the House, but you got the sine die, and people really, they needed the break to recharge their batteries is kind of the take I'm getting when I talk to some of your colleagues.
Yeah, toward the end of the session, it was kind of stressful, and everybody had just kind of, had enough of it. It gets pretty stressful and kind of weighs on you, but once you get out and clear your mind and, refresh for a minute, you're good to go and not that big of a deal. And you're right. I have talked to some of my colleagues that have just kind of, just unplugged and just kind of recharging and kind of spending time with their families and their businesses and their jobs and, regrouping, I guess, preparing for next year.
Let me ask you this, I guess the big story kind of at our level, and I wonder how surprised you were, because this is sort of in your expertise, the decision by the Ivey administration not to reappoint Lee Gwofny as at the chairwoman of the Pardons and Paroles Board, drawn a little bit of ire from some of these victims' rights groups that people seem to really, really like her. But then she had her detractors on the left as well, who really didn't think she was play by the rules or whatever set forth when it comes to the guidelines of releases. But I am a little surprised that she didn't get reappointed.
Yeah, I've been watching that a little bit. Of course, I'm not privy to all the information that goes into those decisions, but I don't know. You're always going to have the left and the right, have their opinions about certain things. I mean, we've seen it with Gradick when he got removed years ago. So it's hard to say, typically my constituents will call and give me their concerns if they're seeing an issue one way or the other. We address it, but I've not really had a lot of issues or complaints over the last few years. So kind of hard to gauge and see where we're at with that. And, I'm not sure what went into the decision making by the governor or her staff to make that move.
Well, I guess the question would be then, and we could leave the personalities out of it, but were you generally satisfied with the direction of the board there? Because once Gradick and Guathy came in, remember, it was like we got to change the way we're doing business here after the double homicide up in Marshall County. We can't be letting people out. And they did. They did change. I mean, it changed. There's no question about it. It was very tangible, and it drew a lot of criticism. But was that the right move to sort of go that, or is it time to kind of move on from it? What do you think? What was your take on how they were operating?
I didn't have a problem with the way they were operating then. I thought that they were making some wise decisions. I know they were making some tough decisions, and based on criminal histories and information related to the inmates. But, I also feel like that Cam Ward and his group are also doing a good job and, trying to find a good balance there. And, each case has to be reviewed individually and based on its own merits, make their decisions. And I've not seen anything major in the new administration here that's caused any alarm with me.
Well, I guess the fear was, well, at least with the new, now how national it may continue this policy or he may not, but the idea that we need to release more inmates, that we're keeping these guys in too long. There's, a whole cottage industry of left wing storefronts, that do this, that, they advocate for prisoners to be released. These violent felons, and my understanding, Representative, it's hard to get a sentence in an Alabama prison. You got to do something really, really heinous to achieve that. And that's, that's just sort of the way the law is, because we really do have issues, with overcrowding and, with who we incarcerate, but that we maybe for a while there pre Gradick Guathy, it was a little too loose trying to let people out for the sake of easing the overcrowded burden. And then, we'll have new prisons online in the next 10 years, one assumes, that it was a little harder to get that parole.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, we were seeing a couple of years ago, we were seeing a lot of rhetoric from our Democrat colleagues in the legislature that was pushing to let more people out and insinuating the only way to make Alabama safer was to release more violent offenders, which made no sense. So, the Attorney General's office came in and did some updates and reviews for us and kind of went over the stats and showed us how many were in on violent offenses and how many second, third, fourth, and fifth chances they had, and went through all the information there, and there's absolutely no reason to be doing, mass let outs or releases. I mean, we have got to keep violent offenders in jail, and that's just absolutely a part of our criminal justice system.
Well, and I was talking to Senator Elliott on Friday about it. The urgency of which you guys had the special session and had to get the prison construction going, here it is. It's 2025. It was 2021 or two. It's 2021, I believe, with the special session. And I don't know. Like, it still seems like things are moving a little slower than I had expected with this prison construction.
Yeah, absolutely it is. It's very discouraging that we are not further along than we are. And, you know, in my opinion, I think the further along we get, the longer we wait, the more we're going to see expenses, change orders, and everything else coming to these contracts and bids because, you know, we've seen where everything seems to be getting, you know, more expensive day by day. So I think the sooner we can get these prisons built and, you know, do some truth in sentencing and let's hold these violent offenders to the time that they get and make them suffer consequences for their actions, I think you'll see things start to turn around and you're going to see, you know, less violent crime and people are going to realize there's consequences to their actions.
Well, and, you know, like what were your expectations? Because I thought they would, you know, start breaking ground on both these facilities. They would be moving. We had to do it a certain way. We had to do this construction management process, which has turned out to be a very expensive way to do things. And I thought by now, I mean, I know these things take years and years to build, but they're barely going to come online with the first one. I don't even know what's going on in Escambia County. You hear a little bit about it, and they're still talking about how they're going to go about it. But I thought we'd be much, much further down the road by now.
Yeah, absolutely. Myself, too. You know, I don't know. There's, you know, in the business world, this would not be acceptable. And, you know, you would go out of business or go under if you took too long on some of these projects. And so I think that, you know, we have got to become more efficient in establishing these projects and these bids and accepting them and moving along. And let's get this done. And we've, you know, seen ever since I've been in the legislature since 2018, this is a major need in our state to get more prisons and better prisons built, safer for the guards and more beds for the violent offenders. So we have got to find a way to do this. You know, if it's a priority, it's got to be done. And we've got to hold everybody accountable to make sure that they are, you know, making sure they're doing their part to fulfill these bids and these projects.
Yeah, I think, and it's just, I guess, because, like, it was Trump's last administration when the U.S. attorneys, all three of them, really came out hard against the Alabama Department of Corrections and Governor Ivey. And, I mean, she's been through reelection since then, and we obviously had the special session over the Eighth Amendment concerns. The next governor is going to probably, and it's looking likely it's going to be Tommy Tuberville, but next governor is going to have to, is going to inherit this situation and have to move on it pretty quick.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think they're going to have to just step up, bite the bullet, and, you know, move this project forward quick, fast, and in a hurry, and let's get our prisons where they need to be. You know, the last thing we need or want is for the federal government to come in and take them over and basically be writing, you know, checks for improvements or whatever out of our checkbook. So if we want to retain control of the money that's being spent on the prisons and what we're doing, then we need to step it up and do our part.
Yeah. And, we'll see. I mean, I you know, there's a lot of questions there we could talk about probably in a future time, you know, like we'll wonder what the dynamic between the next governor and the legislature is going to be like, and what are you guys going to have to do to really get his policies in place. But before we let you go, we'll talk about this. And, you know, like I mentioned it earlier, this time a year ago, we were talking about crime. We were talking about, I think even Reed Ingram had offered an idea of a state takeover of police departments that weren't meeting the standards. It does seem like whatever it is, and I you know, the crime spikes around the country, you see it. Not really seeing it as badly in Alabama, and here we are. It's halfway through July.
Yeah, we're blessed here in Alabama, and truthfully, you know, we've got a lot of great law enforcement across our state, from our state troopers on down, and we're blessed to have that. And we've got a great relationship with our community and our law enforcement. So that is huge in your, you know, community oriented policing and making sure that we're all, vested in this and trying to take a part in our safety. And I think that, Alabama's probably, you know, one of the better states to look at in how we're doing things and what we're doing to keep our citizens safe and, you know, the relationship that we've been able to maintain with our communities.
Right. And then, like I said, but, you know, in Montgomery, and it's a relatively quiet, and maybe it's even a product of a municipal election cycle, I don't know, but that whatever it is, seems to be working, and maybe it is. It's these task force that, you know, and Governor Ainsworth was in Fairhope last week talking about it. Maybe this stuff is really, really working.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it my whole career. I'm on my, you know, 34th year, going on my 34th year, and I've seen it. These task force do work. I mean, they go in and address area. You know, we've gone in, Mobile County Sheriff's Department and surrounding agencies have gone in and helped Pritchard over the years when they were short-handed or having spikes in crime or problems. And, you know, we were able to go in and kind of get things under control for the most part, but you still have to maintain that and do it. And that's where a lot of agencies are running into problems, is just not having enough manpower or being able to recruit or even retain the officers they have to do that. But the task force definitely helps.
Representative, we got to leave it there. We're out of time, but we always appreciate your time, and we'll do it again in a couple of weeks.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Jeff. Y'all have a blessed day.
Thank you. State Representative Shane Stringer there. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Way. Like a rhinestone cowboy, riding out on a horse in a star-spangled rodeo. Like a rhinestone cowboy, getting caught and let us. Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program if you so choose. We got a bunch of texts to get to here. We'll get to those over the next couple of segments. Coming up in the next hour, we'll hear from Dale Jackson from Once Upon a Time. I guess brethren in radio. He gave me my start in radio. I regret it to this day. But he'll be with us in the next hour. Mike, I think ICE might have been listening to your show last week. They actually have arrested, are deporting Jesus. They arrested the Serenos gang member Jesus Aguilar, an illegal alien from Mexico in Huron, California. I'm getting pictures of flowers. I assume this is for Bill Finch, a popular gardening outdoors host. Sean, as long as Israel is happy, that's all that matters, right? I mean, is that the belief, Sean, that this whole Epstein saga is tied to Israel somehow? Epstein was a Mossad, and he was, you know, and they're just trying to keep it on the down low. I don't know. You guys give the government way too much credit. Now, I know they do things out of sight, out of mind, that are probably untoward. But something this big, I just don't know that you could carry it on for years and years and years. I guess here it is. They're showing Trump what he did talk about Epstein and said he would declassify 9/11, JFK, and Epstein files. And then as he has, it's just like there's nothing to see here. It's almost impossible to hate Shelby any more than I already do. Well, Shelby's the reason. Like, his judicial picks like I said, the president defers to the senior U.S. senator, Republican or Democrat, on a lot of nominations. Not so much anymore. But I believe I really look at her as kind of the, because she would author the opinions. And she had this, like, it was almost like this weird sort of rebuke of the Alabama legislature. Like, she took it personally that they would defy a court order the way that they did and let them have it in her opinion or her order when they redrew Alabama's maps. They did it. The courts did it. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Have a good time. And then one day a wealthy customer bought the Indian maid. He took her home so far away.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program? Text me, and we'll get we'll respond to whatever it is that's on your mind. I got a bunch of texts to get to. We'll get to those in just a moment. Still to come on the program here in about a half hour. We'll talk to Dale Jackson from WVNN. And that's a station in Huntsville, I am told. And then Yellowhammer News, which is a website, I am told. But, okay, obviously a joke, having been employed by both of those places at one time or another. Also, the program, Bradley J. from Breitbart News, and we'll hit on kind of what's going on in D.C. right now. I think, kind of manufactured controversy. Well, it's not manufactured to a certain set of people. But then it's being used, and they're pumping this division over Jeffrey Epstein's demise into the mainstream media machine. Which is what always happens with attorneys general, and they know that half the country is not going to like them because they don't like the current president. They know that usually or typically the base grows dissatisfied with the targets or aggressiveness of the DOJ, the administration that's in power. J.D. Crow cartoon out. He's got a picture of an ICE guy wearing a mask, and then you're never going to believe what he did here, because he never does this. He drew the shadow of a guy in a Klan. It's like a Klan silhouette. Never does he ever use Klan imagery. J.D. Crow would never do that. Obviously, I'm being facetious. This is all he does. So, ICE equals Klan down at down the street for me. The woman who this is kind of a funny story, and I don't hope I'm going to give it too much away. The one of my neighbors also is she runs the Moms for Liberty chapter in Baldwin County, and the two of them are almost neighbors. Wonder what those block parties are like. J.D. Crow and Moms for Liberty lady, our friend Rebecca Watson. 251-343-0106. We're going to roll through the rest of these texts here. If I'm not mistaken, I think Bill Clinton and Trump were on the travelogue. We know Bill Clinton was a bunch. And, like, we knew, I mean, I follow conservative media pretty close. And some of the talking heads on, like, Fox News, I mean, they really played the Epstein stuff up bigly. And I don't know that it was, you know, because Trump wasn't in power when a lot of this was going on. So I suppose the question is, you know, how much of this was like a campaign promise? What do we expect to find out? And if there's nothing there, just give them the benefit of the doubt for a moment. If there's really nothing there, let's say there isn't. I know that's a skeptical, the skeptics out there would say probably not, but just for the sake of this discussion, there's nothing there. What would the reaction be to that? He was just a scumbag sexual predator. And it was sort of a power trip or whatever. I can't get in the heads of these guys. And it wasn't this like secret political cabal that you could see being the case. Well, we'll say it wasn't. Is there anything they could say or show you to make you believe that? What is the barrier to entry here? What is the bar? Is there anything that the government, even under the Trump administration, could show you to put you at ease and make you believe this was sort of Al Capone's vault, if you will? Leo, when is some aspiring journalist going to interview Miss Maxwell sitting in prison? She was in the middle of all of it. Leo, it's not easy to go interview federal inmates. I don't know if you've ever tried. And furthermore, the Miss Maxwell would have to be willing to conduct the interview. This is not, you know, it's not something that's done with a regularity. Unnamed texter, I can see why you say Kim McFeeters is just a little more polished Ricky now. Yeah, Kim McFeeters, guys. He's running against Tommy Tuberville for governor. I don't know if he's changed, but I watched him when he ran against Gary Palmer for Congress the last cycle. And I saw a couple of his speeches, and it kind of makes you grimace a little. There's a little cringe. I mean, he really does believe in some kooky things. Just proceed with caution if you try to jump on that bandwagon. Unnamed texter, I support Trump. He's doing an incredible job, but I refuse to put blinders on. All the women and Maxwell know exactly who the high-profile perpetrators are. We don't need a physical list to talk to those women. It feels like Trump trying to keep this undercover at this point. Well, if that's the case, then why haven't they talked to some of these women? Why haven't these stories come out? I mean, if this is really what was going on, then why haven't the victims, not that they have any obligation to do so, but you would think that they would say, hey, this is an injustice here. This is what's going on here. This injustice, this wrongdoing, and speak out more, because you really haven't seen that. Was it a victimless crime? Obviously not, if we're wanting to find out what happened. I mean, this is just a question. Were they paid off? Maybe. Mike says prisons. All right. John, why not repurpose no longer used buildings for prisons, at least as a temporary fix? They are in violation of the Eighth Amendment. And this is the reason they just didn't, instead of, renovating the old prisons, they had to build new ones. Is this the way they were built? They would be obviously sanitary. They're not sanitary, and they're like I said, they're in violation of the Eighth Amendment. According to the courts, and apparently the DOJ, they're not up to standard. They're cruel and unusual punishment. And they just would have renovated those, but they can't because, like I said, the buildings are falling apart. You have these, outbreaks of diseases we haven't seen in this country. Almost like medieval diseases. You also have just sheer overcrowding. But also the ability to secure these prisons in a way that keeps the inmates safe. I mean, there's sexual assault. I mean, it always goes on in prison, but they can't hire enough prison guards to tamp down on some of the illegalities within the prison, number one. So what they want to do is use cameras, technology, things that would keep a better eye on things, and the way the prisons are constructed, wiring. I mean, you got to remember, these things are built, they're prisons, they're built like a fort. You can't just bust a hole through concrete filled masonry with wiring and everything you need for cameras. You also have a lot of exploitation of inmates by other inmates. Which, I mean, I know that's kind of the cost of doing business in prison, but there is an obligation by the people who run the prisons to at least try their best to prevent that from happening and not take advantage of the situation. But they're also taking advantage of the situation, selling drugs to inmates, contraband. You always hear about these prison guards getting caught, self-enrichment. And they put these prisons in places where there's not a workforce, particularly Bullock and Barber counties. There's just not people who are going to be prison guards. There's not enough people willing to go to work. So try to overcome it with technology, with cameras, and you can't just do that. It becomes too cost prohibitive. So you just need to start all over again. So a little backstory here, and it just goes back to Wallace with these prisons. The reason we have the screwed up system we have was Alabama did the same thing they did ran into now, the same federal judge sort of situation in the 70s. Outdated prisons, conditions that violated the Eighth Amendment. And Wallace, being George Wallace, wanted to fight against the federal government. Judge Frank Johnson. There's a whole story there. Myron Thompson, he sort of was the Myron Thompson of that era. I guess Myron Thompson is probably more of the Frank Johnson of this era. But they're always butting heads, that federal judge and the governor. And it was just this adversarial relationship. And some of it was civil rights, but a lot of it was prison too. So when push came to shove and the federal courts always win, my friend Jay Town would say, the federal government's undefeated here. Wallace had to build new prisons. So Wallace didn't just do like Governor Ivey, we're going to build 2 mega prisons and be done with it. He tried to make it a jobs program and put prisons in places that needed employment, which turned out to be what we have now. Elmore County, Escambia County, Monroe, Limestone, and where he was from, Barber County, Clayton, Alabama, Barber and Bullock County. And that's what happened, and that was the original sin that got us where we are today. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Text line 251-343-0106. Be in touch with the show by texting me. Gene, Epstein girlfriend has the goods. Cash and Blondie and Bon Jovi can interview her. See, like, Gene, like, made little cute nicknames. That's adorable. How, did you spend a lot of time, or did you get that off of, like, a Democrat message board? A named texter, this is for Mary. What is that orange flower, small bulb? Thanks for your program. Mary, maybe you're listening to the podcast. Mommy issues. To be clear, we want the Democrats on that list. 2 MAGA is right. Someone protecting child rapists is strange, and only a woman has been charged. It is strange. I'm not going to deny that. I don't know what it could be. I don't know. There's too many unknowns about this for me to render a judgment. But we are innocent till proven guilty. They never proved Epstein guilty, did they? What was that going to entail? Named Texter. The way he and his colleagues did the contract is in the best interest of the builder to take forever. I think referring to Stringer and Stringer didn't write the contract. They wrote the legislation authorizing the funding, the financing. And it's the governor's purview, I guess, with the legislature not defining the terms of how the contract was to execute it. And it's the governor who did it this way. And the secret there, unnamed texter, on the prison contract, that we were told, we got to hurry. We don't have time, a minute to spare. The federal government's going to take over our prisons. We got to do it this way. And it was this construction management system they employed where you don't get an upfront price. You know, typically in government contracts, you put them out, you qualify bidders, and they set out like a list of criteria. You had to do so much business. You had to be capable of doing this. You had to show projects that were similar to it. And then they put out some drawings or whatever, some plans, some blueprints, computerized, I guess, these days, whatever, and they all bid, and the lowest qualified bid wins the contract, and there's a price associated with it. They didn't do that this way. They said, we don't have time for that. That takes years. And they went ahead and awarded the contract to Goodell Construction. And we were told at the time, well, they're the only ones who are really, you know, qualified to do this. Just so happens that out of all the contractors in America, the only one that was really qualified happened to be in Montgomery, Alabama, headquartered. And they said, you know, this is how we're going to do it. And they took plans to, remember, the governor was going to do this. She was going to not go to the legislature for anything. And they were going to raise money. This group of private contractors were going to raise the money, borrow it, and then lease the prison facilities to the state of Alabama. And the state government was going to pay rent. And it'd be like cash flow for the contractors or whatever. Well, they went to go bond it, and at the time it was BLM, you know, and they couldn't get the financing to do it. And that's when the state had to, the legislature had to step in and make the state the borrower, and there was no need for that middleman, but they still tried to do a middleman sort of program. 251-343-0106. Stay tuned. Dale Jackson coming up. This is the Jeff Boer Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to the Jeff Boer Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. Just hit us up on the text line and we'll respond to whatever it is that's on your mind. Joining us now, we do this every week, back from the lake, Dale Jackson, WVNN and Yellowhammer News. Dale, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Glad to be back.
Just get a good night's sleep.
I did. You know, I got to tell you, I didn't do my show today, but I did yours.
Well, that's very, very kind of you. Well, I was going to ask you if you got a good night's sleep, but presumably you did.
Yeah, the answer is yes. Yes, always.
Did you happen to hack Bilbo's Twitter account, did you, today?
I wish I did. I would have done much better stuff with it than they did. All these ridiculous things they tweeted out, but they got the attention they wanted. So whoever did it. I don't know if these like hackers who do these crypto scams, because that's really what this is about, right? All the other stuff is just to get attention. Some of us buy the cryptos they're trying to sell or whatever, the crypto they're trying to sell. So it's got to work in some way, shape, or form. But I just don't know who would be like, oh, the Elmo account said the N-word, and it also tweeted out a link for crypto. I guess I'll buy it.
Yeah, well, it was just like too good of an opportunity to just try to scam some people out of $50 a pop or whatever.
Yep, yeah, exactly.
I don't know if, like you said, if it were one of us, it would have been much more creative, I suppose.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I the commentary was a very Bush League.
I mean, just look at what he said, or the account said, and just ask yourself this: is he the front runner for the Democratic nomination?
Yes, that is. He checked a lot of boxes. You're right.
Anti-Semitic, except for the trans thing. He was a little way too much anti-trans for that. That will cause him some problems. But he did tweet out a bunch of anti-Jew stuff. He called Donald Trump a pedophile in a little more colorful language than that. But he did. And so, yeah, I mean, he's exactly what they're looking for. And finally, someone's not afraid to tell the truth. So,
I can't wait. Maybe this will be a fun trend in American political commentary. So my lineup column this week, and then it's kind of just like one of these evergreen things you could do because the news cycle's not really compelling. I mean, there's the same old, same old. You and I are doing this segment in 15, 20 years. What are we going to look back at this time in American history and look, and it's not going to be like what we are being told it is, that everything's on fire, that everything is chaotic. It's just like another ho-hum time, or those Trump years weren't as bad as they said they were, are they?
I think what it'll be is he got a lot done very quickly. I mean, he made it. He went very quickly and got as much of it done as he possibly could. And I think it's been impressive. And I think people will see that way. Even if they don't agree with what he's doing, he's still doing an awful lot. I mean, he's doing a lot. And I think that's what people will say.
Yeah, but like, you know, and let's look at it like this. Like, how do we remember Clinton, Bush, Obama? Biden will always, I think, be kind of considered a disaster, but because he's of his physical or mental ailments or whatever, cognitive decline, I guess. But this is going to be like, he's just like another American president.
It will view it as omnipresent. I mean, you got to keep in mind, by the time this is over, he'll be omnipresent for 12 straight years. More than that, actually, but more like 13 straight years. But he's omnipresent, and even when Biden was president, Donald Trump was walking around getting all the attention in the world that he wants, and he's able to do that. And that's what it will be, because we will have a thing where the president isn't in the news every single day. So I think that's basically how we'll look at it.
Yeah, but it's not going to be authoritarian, the worst time ever. You know how people mope around about Trump being president right now on the left? They did the same thing, because I see, like, this is how they acted when Bush was president. Bush derangement syndrome was a real thing, and then you kind of look back, it's kind of funny. Now liberals don't really look at Bush as all that bad, and it's more conservatives are like, man, what were we thinking at the time?
Yeah, they're wrong about that. Bush was a great president. He was the president we needed at that time. But the simple fact is, they will never look back and say Trump was a good guy. We got him wrong. I mean, they're never going to say that. This guy has rotted their brains, and he will rot their brains for eternity.
Well, I wonder, though, like, the next bad thing, like, whoever is the Republican nominee will be worse than Trump, right? I mean, they're never going to just settle on, okay, yeah, it was really bad back then, but this guy's not as bad as Trump, because it becomes, that's what it feels like.
Well, remember what they do. Remember what they did. You know, DeSantis was worse than Trump could be. Even when Trump was running against Rubio and Ted Cruz, both of those guys were worse than Trump would be. I mean, and so that's how they'll frame it. They'll say, yeah, we all knew that Donald Trump was bad, but imagine if these guys get in, because if these guys get in, they're going to be like
a more competent, smart, yes, Trump. Exactly, yeah. Right. Yeah. Trump, yeah, with the IQ points. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I said it. I said DeSantis is Trump with a bigger brain. I mean that's in a better suit. That was what I was saying about DeSantis. That's a simple fact. I think DeSantis would have tried to do most of the same stuff. He would have just played it a little more traditionally, close to the vest. And people didn't want that. They wanted the chaos, and that's fine. I mean, that's exactly what people wanted, and they're getting it. They are getting it, and this is exactly what they asked for. So on both, the Republicans are getting exactly what they want, with the exception of the Epstein stuff. And I think that's an extremely online perspective. And that's why the media is playing it up. I just, you know, cat turd is not, you know, mainstream American thought, but it's having an impact on my best friend, the deputy director of the FBI, and Kash Patel and Pam Bondi and all these other things. I don't feel particularly strongly about the Epstein files in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I've been getting this question. Is Pam Bondi on the hot seat? They're not going to get rid of Pam Bondi over this. This is a blip. I mean, it's a big deal, and I get, like, government transparency, but in the grand scheme of the DOJ and everything the DOJ does, this is relatively small.
Yes. I mean, it just here's the thing, though. It's not over yet. Okay, there's going to be more. Okay, we're gonna see something else. Well, something else is gonna come, and I'll tell you, the part of this that bothers me the most is, you know, all these people just don't seem to understand if they're in, and I think the media knows this, but if Biden had something that said Trump did something, he'd have used it. They did everything they possibly could to go after Donald Trump. You're telling me that he's on the Epstein list and he's a
well, you know, Dale, the reason that Biden didn't do it is because he probably had connections to the Epstein list too. They're just protecting themselves.
Like they wouldn't have just cherry picked it out and used what they wanted.
Yeah, that's what I said, because that's what they always do. The hypocrisy knows no bounds with the Democratic Party. There's double standards about. Why wouldn't there be a double standard this time? You know,
correct. And so, I mean, they.
But I still don't think it's going to be. I don't think it's going to cost Pam Bondi her job.
I don't think so either. I don't think so either.
Well, and let me ask you this.
This is an internet thing.
In the course of the, I mean, name me the last popular attorney general.
I don't know. I mean, what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to even pretend that we care? I mean, at this point, it's all just an extension of Trump, just like Merrick Garland was an extension of Biden. I mean, that's exact. We all know this.
I mean, maybe Ed Meese during the Reagan administration, but the thing is, there's even Democrat or Republican AGs are never popular in the public ever.
Yeah, why should they be?
Because the left or whoever the party that's not in power is not going to like anybody.
Right.
And then the party that is in power is going to think that that AG is not pursuing enough or doing enough. It was true.
Why aren't you putting enough of my political enemies in jail?
Merrick Garland was, there was a cause for him to be removed. Barr, obviously Jeff Sessions. You go back. You didn't talk much about Eric Holder. You go back further and further. But the attorney general's office is not like a place you go to win popularity.
Well, I'll tell you this. You laid something out, I think, pretty clear. You talk about Eric Holder, how nobody really talked about it. Well, it's because he was doing exactly what Obama wanted him to do. He was doing it. And Merrick Garland got in trouble because he wasn't doing he wasn't putting Trump in jail at every turn, even though it's exactly what he was trying to do.
Or prosecuting more January 6th stuff. I mean, it was that. And these guys, but they're never, it's never going to be good enough. You take that job and everything you do is going to be questioned, marginalized. It's a hard place to be.
Yeah, and Jeff Sessions did everything right. I mean, that's the simple fact of the matter is he was 100% correct on everything. He told Donald Trump, you didn't do anything wrong. You know this, let this play out. And Donald Trump just couldn't do it. And that wasn't good enough. And they had to just go completely insane on it. And Donald Trump was his own worst enemy in that regard. Made that way worse than it had to be. I said on my radio show at the time, I mean, I don't think Donald Trump's guilty, but does he think he's guilty? Because of the way he's acting?
Well, I think the Sessions did make a miscue by letting himself be boxed in by these people and saying, let's let it play out. Because it wasn't going to be a fair process. It was going to create, sow seeds of doubt in the Trump presidency.
If Donald Trump would have just said, I'm going to let it play out and not say anything else about it, which he can't do. I understand it's not his style. It would have petered out. He just fed it all the time. Get rid of him. Fire him. Fire that guy. Fire that guy. Fire him. Fire him. Fire him.
Just fired Mueller. So this is a stupid Democrat thing. What would have happened out of that?
Nothing. Just we would have had some.
And I think that's what people wanted. Outrage. Like we won. You know, Republicans looking at it, they're like, we won the election fair and square, and now we have to put up with this. And there's nothing there. And there turned out not to be anything there.
Yep, that's right. That's right. I agree with that. I agree. But had he said nothing and just said, look, this thing's investigated, we'll deal with it when it's done.
But you know that's not ever in the realm of possibilities, right?
Oh, no, that's not the Trump world that you live in. I agree with that. I mean, I
maybe he wants that with this Epstein stuff, but he's not going to get it.
Yeah, no. But again, that's not his style. It's never going to be his style. So, yeah, I'm not surprised he wasn't willing to do that. So,
yeah, but like the moral of the story is like, yeah, Pam Bondi is taking some criticism, some flack right now, but that's just the job. Yeah, you're never going to make everybody happy. You're going to make fewer happy. And there's no point in trying to use that office to do, as a springboard or anything. So you just make the most of it.
The whole thing with guys like, you know, Bongino and all this other stuff. Bongino was making like $4 million a year, I believe. And he was, that's how much money he was making. He was doing really well. He was doing okay. And he walked away from that in order to do this job at the FBI. Do you think he's going to walk away from that? I mean, it doesn't seem like something that's going to happen.
Well, yeah, and I think when you see these stories about it and you're watching it, it's like they're just trying to stir the pot. I mean, it's right, so exactly. obvious. It's the talking points were sent out. This is what they're trying to do, sow seeds of division and get those seeds of division kind of floated out there. And therefore, you know, there's trouble in Trump world, but it's just not reality.
Yeah, and if there is, who cares? Who was Biden's FBI deputy director?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Why do we know? Who cares?
I mean, we do remember like Trump's and it was all. I don't know. I think the Republicans.
But I mean, remember, just not to cut you off, but remember. When they were talking about Trump's, it was all because he's a Trump sicko fan. He's an audience of one, audience of one. But with Biden's guys, those don't matter because they're doing the right thing, and you know Biden's not going to interfere. And all of that was a lie. Every aspect of that was a lie. But they sold that message, so you didn't hear anything about who that guy was. Who cares who he is?
Because the frustration is that for Republicans at least, that they listen to what the media are saying. Just correct. There's no reason to anymore. It's time to just like they're not relevant. They're not going to do anything, and you know, unless you bomb Iran, I guess. But you know, everything else is going to be something to complain about. Why even take them into account?
Yeah, why feed them? Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I totally agree with that. It's like there's no reason.
It's hard. It's hard because, like, especially in that world, I mean, you're inundated with New York Times and Politico and you know, whatever.
And you know who loves those guys? Donald Trump.
Yeah. Like, why is Maggie Haberman and, yeah.
The Meet the Press girl is. He loves talking to her. Caitlin Collins. He loves talking to her. Oh, yeah. He loves doing that. Remember Maggie Haberman? She was the Trump whisperer, but got everything about Trump wrong.
Right.
I mean, it's just that he loves that stuff, and so he's sort of like his own hype man, and he doesn't ever tell himself, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this interview. You know, he's never going to say that. He wants to do every one of those interviews.
What do these guys just think that they'll win him over? I mean, that at some point.
Trump thinks, yes. Trump believes his force of personality can sway anyone. And eventually, they'll understand that Trump is good. he also picks the right fights, though, right? I mean, his biggest asset is the quality of his enemies.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like you said, you sit here and you watch it, like, who cares what those guys say? Why do we care? But I guess the same would apply for...
Because he cares.
That's why. And that's an impediment for... But Republicans do this, too. He's not. It's not just him I'm complaining about. It's even... Like you talk about this, like Republicans in Alabama listening to AL.com or whatever.
Yep. Because here's part of that. The media, the traditional media, is overwhelmingly liberal. So if they want to have any chance of getting their message out... They generally believe they have to talk to the traditional media, and that's the cost of doing business.
But now, you don't. There's alternatives.
I
right?
agree with what you're saying, but they consider that to be basically just the cost of doing business. And I think they all think also, like you just said, that they can sway them.
Right. Right.
And you know, Kyle Whitmire he's going to give me a fair shake because I'm going to talk to him. But really, what they don't understand is that Kyle Whitmire is sleeping in his wife's basement in Washington, D.C., crying about how he never made it. Well, his wife has a big girl job.
Yeah.
And so
I have the Pulitzers.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Go back down to the basement. All right. And that's basically the gist of it. But they think they can convince him to not say Katie Britt is a shrill harpy who needs to go away when he's going to do that every single time, no matter what Katie Britt does.
Well, anyway, Dell, folks want to find you online. They want to see your latest post on feetfinder.net. How can they do so?
Every possible social media platform at The Dale Jackson. You can find me there. And footfinder.net is another one of those. I love going there. So many feet. So many feet.
Wait till you see the latest Instagram spread Dell's got here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Just my arrow and my hickory bow from 100 yards, don't you know? Wow, I do it all the time. They all gather around my teepee. Ladies!
Well, it pays the bills we made. Old life had kicked him down to the ground. When he tried to get up, life would kick him back down. One day, Papa called me to his dying bed. Put his hands on my shoulder, then in tears he said, Patches, I'm depending on you, son, to pull the through.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the show. All you gotta do is text me, and we'll respond to whatever it is that's on your mind. Bradley J. from Breitbart News coming up in the next hour, so stay tuned for that. Roll through some text here. We'll get just a handful here. We'll spread them out. Toothless Bammer, Alan Dershowitz, says he is on seeing the list and can't tell some of the names. Why was Alan privy to the list? Because he was involved. He was one of the accused names on the list. He had made some trips to on the Lolita Express or whatever, and they started looking at him. And then he may have also been, and this is me speculating, approached about being counsel for one of the interested parties. When, you know, and you go through discovery. So I don't know if that's the case, but that's why. It's certainly a possibility, Toothless Spammer. Just how it works, but they were coming for him on this Epstein stuff as well. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. Hit us up there. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poore Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three begins right now. Text line, you need to be in touch with me, 251-343-0106. So you can get in touch with the program, as mentioned, Bradley J., my colleague at Breitbart News, will be with us at the bottom of the hour, so stay tuned for that. My question is, why would Donald Trump and his administration say anything about the case, especially if they were planning on not doing anything? There's a possibility that, and then I'm just speculating here, they didn't know the whole story. They didn't know why the Epstein saga didn't leak out or hadn't been put out there. I mean, we like to think of government as sort of I don't know, like, you know, what the harm is there in transparency? We should be open and... But there may be a national security reason. I don't know if, indeed, as some people suggest, is he an Israeli plant or something? It seems crazy to me. I don't think Bongino's going to walk away. I think what's happened here, though, is the outrage is initiated sort of the deep state to seize upon it and get their willing participants in the media to go along with it to sow seeds of division. So I would say this, I don't think that there's anything we could do about it. I don't think that's going to, but it is what it is. You need to be aware. We had this big unknown, the whole Epstein, the details surrounding it. but we know it's controversial. This is what we do know. We do know that there's a lot of disagreement about how that's being handled on the right. We agree with, we understand that. And we also know that establishment DC doesn't like Trump, and the media is part of that. And they see it, and they're really starting to pour gasoline on this fire. Now, does it really matter if, like, the deep state toady on CNN or MSNBC, what they say about what's going on behind the scenes? Maybe not. But this is what the way you need to look at it is, okay, see what's going on here. We may not know the whole story here on Epstein and what happened there, why there was clearly a 180 from within regarding this. Especially some of the statements they put out the Trump Truth Social is a stark contrast to the official word from the DOJ and the FBI. But we can see what we know. What do we know? And we know that there's division on the right over this. And then you could take that and the left sees that and they smell blood in the water and they're gonna strike and they're starting to really hit it hard. And like I said, I don't know there's much that can be done about that, but this is the reality. I mean, this is sort of how these administrations start to fall apart. But it always seems to start with DOJ. And this, to me, looks like an unforced error. Like day one when they got in, okay, Epstein, what are we going to do about this? And maybe they did talk it over. And the hope was that it was going to go away, but that was miscalculating your audience. They do care. They really care. So my thinking here is you need to figure out a way to handle this better. At least say something, show something, give something tangible to show. If indeed there's nothing here, LV Dershowitz was Epstein's attorney for a while. So that's probably why he's privy to some of this. B-Dark. Epstein files are like UFO files. Nobody knows nothing. And then adds, maybe they are all mad because they weren't on the list. Unattached, the only way to get over Listgate is to open up Area 51 for tours. Okay, I don't know. Another distraction. And, how about this possibility? So I think we pretend Trump's playing 4D chess sometimes. But would you rather be arguing about Epstein or Iran? Would you rather be arguing about Epstein or Israel, or maybe they're one of the same, or whatever? Would you rather be arguing about Epstein or tariffs? Have we talked about Big Beautiful Bill? Mommy issues. We all care because apparently kids were involved. This isn't going away, and I'm actually proud of MAGA for not backing down on this. How do we know? I mean, I guess we do know from some of the victims. But we don't know what we don't know. Why haven't the victims at least come forward with some of the details. Like, if they were actual clients, they had customers, and they had, I mean, you had these world-renowned, famous people. How are they keeping them quiet? And I'm going to say we shouldn't care. But is it, mommy issues, is it possible that this is just that, that it was, well, we really know kids were well, but settle down, mommy issues. What I'm trying to say is, what if it's just that? It's just an unfortunate situation where crimes were committed with children and not some big grand political conspiracy. Just because the kids were involved doesn't mean it has like national implications with a who's who in American politics and power and finance or whatever. I'm not asking why we should care as much as I'm asking why do we think, why do we believe? That there's more here than just what meets the eye. How do we get from they're not releasing the details to it's some kind of grand conspiracy, some kind of grand cover up? What do we think that we're missing? Well, there's a list of people that, you know, Bill Clinton or maybe even Donald Trump or whatever. But what if there's not? What if there's not that? And there's nothing else to tell. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that that's the case, but it could be. What are they supposed to say? How do you prove a negative when you say there's nothing there? Well, we don't believe you. Show us more. You promised us more. Because if it's just a crime on the innocent, well, that's one thing. And we've litigated that. We've talked about it. It's been, you know, tried in the court of public opinion. It'll never be tried in a court of law because the accused is no longer with us. So tell me, mommy, she's like, I'm not questioning why you should or shouldn't care. I'm asking, like, why, what do you want? From my understanding, it's because they are under a gag order. Well, say, we don't know that, do we? It'll come out. Somebody's got to, I just wonder why it hadn't come out yet. Why didn't Democrats use this against Trump if he was on it, if he's covering up for himself? Because the assumption is that it's like, well, there must be something there because they're not wanting to talk about it anymore. Well, what if there really is nothing there? What do you even do? IT Jesus, did the authorities ever say there was a list? Pam Bondi said she had to, and I would presume she's the authority, said she had the list on her desk. And then now there's no longer a list. Now, there's one school of thought here that Pam Bondi just wasn't very thorough, didn't actually read the file. But she did say there was a list. Sean, are you serious, Jeff? Say it in a Dick Vitale voice. No. Butter Knife, the whole FC thing is just stupid. Trump was doing that to get the conspiracy theory people riled up and vote for him, just playing politics. And what if that's the case? What if it was just it's a shameless political stunt that he doesn't want to acknowledge? Or his people. It was a shameless political stunt by his surrogates. And I mean, if he came out and said that, what would you say? Well, see, guys, here's what really happened. We embellished this because we wanted you to get out and vote. And then we got in office, and then we got to looking at it. And turned out there really wasn't anything there. I mean, also, is it entirely possible? I mean, this has been going on for years that Trump already knew because he was president for 4 years. And if he already knew, why didn't he put this to rest then? But instead, it looked like a ripe campaign issue, I suppose. Or what? Here's another possibility. Stick with me here. What if there are other charges coming? What if there are other prosecutions involved? Is it appropriate for the president to weigh in on a pending investigation? I don't know why. I mean, if that were the case, why they wouldn't just say that? What they really are still looking at is, you know, speed of government. I don't know. I mean, I think there's a dozen possibilities here. And I'm not saying that, you know, any of them are true, but let's just kind of like brainstorm here and you think about it. Is it really just as simple as, well, the Trump administration is covering up because they're involved? 251-343-0106. Got a few more texts we'll get to on the other side. Stay tuned. This is the Jeff Flores Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean.
Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do. It's good to see you. I must go.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Monday morning. Programming note, coming up on tomorrow's show, former State Senator Trip Pittman got to make time for us. We'll talk to him. Mike Shaw, he's a state lawmaker from Hoover. And we're going to delve into something that I have very limited knowledge of, the world of cryptocurrency. There's a few bills being considered right now, see the price of Bitcoin's up. But we're going to talk about what's going on there. What we need to know. He's kind of an expert in this category. But Mike Shaw from Hoover. And then John Wall, the chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, getting another update on what his political future has in store. Here's something I've been hearing. So we've been hearing that John Wall may look at running for lieutenant governor. But there's also this possibility that's been floated to me by several people. Mike Whatley is the RNC chairman. He's from North Carolina. Well, just so happens, Tom Tillis's resignation means that Whatley could run for the United States Senate if Laura Trump doesn't run. And if he runs, that would open up a vacancy at the RNC. And Chairman Wall may take a shot at the RNC chairmanship. So that's a possibility as well. Let's get through these texts real quick. Dirt Digger, Jeff, it is more the BCI. Donald Trump is like Optimus Prime, transformed and roll out. Butterknife, Trump is a smart, very smart politician. Don't admit you're wrong. Say you're strong. Stay strong. Unnamed texture, there's going to be a lot of controversy surrounding the Epstein matter until the files are released. The left wants to see Trump's name on the client list. The right heard all of the conservative commentators talk endlessly about a cover-up piece for Trump prior to Trump getting elected. In addition, the circumstances surrounding his death are suspicious people. Plus, people eat up events that generate conspiracy speculation. I agree. And these theories arise out of things that are hard to understand, hard to explain. There's no question about that. And the Trump administration has mishandled this. No matter what the truth may be, they mishandled it. Gateway Pundit, Giselle Maxwell, testify in Congress about the full extent of Jeffrey Epstein's criminal empire, reported an hour ago. Mommy issues. Let me be clear, Jeff. I'm not blaming Trump at all. I believe this goes way beyond him. And in fact, I guarantee you, though, there are major power Democrats on that list, too. We want them all. Well, there are. I mean, well, yeah, absolutely. But is that a fair assumption? Or is that a valid assumption? That there are power players, that there is a list, that whatever the list, I mean, define the list. I guess Dershowitz confirmed there was a list. And then we did have Pam Bondi say there was a list. What if there isn't a list? What if she just misspoke? Or, you know, what if the list isn't a client list, it's a suspect list? What if they, you know, and you have to be real careful here. What if the people on the list are guilty or not guilty, but let's say there's the possibility of guilt and you had to investigate them. How do you go about that? I mean, the federal government moved on the January Sixers with very little due process. The due process here seems to be taking a lot longer if that's the case. We don't know that's the case. Why have they declined? Why are they walking away from this? What can you charge them with? Where did these crimes occur? Is it international waters? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of, no one's given us like a good explanation of ABC possibilities. Instead, it's just all about a cover-up that we suspect is there. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show. What if it talk? 106.5.
And it probably always will. And on the old town square, under the barbershop pole, they set me up in the chair.